And on this theory of a lab leak, I've been wondering this. Do we have any idea how that would even work? Have you heard any accounts as to how that might have happened? Is there speculation in the scientific community as to how that happened?
Here we go.
That's a very good question, Jim. So one of the things that people maybe don't fully appreciate, that all of the intelligence agencies agree unanimously that this was not engineered. Namely, they didn't deliberately do this to make a bioweapon. Everybody agrees with that. No matter what your prior thoughts were, everybody agrees with that. A lab leak could be that someone was out in the wild, maybe looking for different types of viruses in bats, got infected, went into a lab, and was being studied in the lab, and then it came out of the lab. But if that's the definition of a lab leak, Jim, then that still is a natural occurrence.
Incredible.
The other possibility is someone takes a virus from the environment that doesn't actually spread very well in humans and manipulates it a bit, and accidentally it escapes or accidentally infects someone, and then you get an outbreak. Those are the possibilities when you're talking about lab leaks.
But are there any accounts of that occurring where one might say, okay, well, there we go. Perhaps this is it. This is what happened.
No.
That you're aware of.
In fact, there are no lab leaks that have led to pandemics. So there have been accidents in a lab that happens intermittently.
Oh.
We've had experiences with that in modern times recently. But there have never been a situation where a virus escaped from a lab that's a brand new virus that no one has ever seen before that led to a pandemic. That has not happened.
All-time clip.
The fires have been started.
Information that gets out on you will be used by the worst people on the internet.
How are you, baby? How old are you?
People should not be walking around with masks.
Russian disinformation. You have my all-time favorite Anthony Fauci soundbite right there. I think I could probably write a short story novel on just that answer, just breaking it down. I don't know how long I want to do that today. We are going to talk about it. Just an incredibly revealing answer about what Anthony Fauci thinks about the audience that he's talking to. And that's an answer from a guy that knows he's about to be deposed in front of Congress, most likely. It's March 14th. Hi, new subbers. My phone has just been going bananas over the last 2 to 3 days. I think it was starting about Saturday, Sunday. I get an email for every new subscription, whether it's paid or it's free, just like I get one for comments or likes. And I know that people shut that off, subscribers shut that off when you comment on threads. I have to just kind of take all of the information in, no matter what time of day it is. And I noticed a kind of a blow up in subscriptions. I didn't know what was going on. I thought maybe somebody linked to me somewhere or what have you. And then as I'm scrolling through my email, I found out that Substack, the platform, featured me and Versus Media on their homepage and on the app as a featured publication for the year. And you get a cute little sticker for that, which that's kind of neat. But I thought, like, I'm going to have to kind of off the bat welcome new subbers instead of what I usually do at the end. If you pay for a subscription, I'll give you a shout out. I welcome you to the classroom, just as we did over on Patreon. I'm not going to do that for the free subbers because there's about, if I'm counting, roughly 420 of you. We'll be here all day. But I will say for the free subbers, kind of how we do things around here is I do this for about an hour, 4 days a week. Sometimes a little less, depending on car troubles. And I usually give the free subbers about a 10, 15, sometimes 20-minute preview of a segment we do, and then I move on and we do the majority of the podcast. And if you do decide to become a monthly or yearly or founding, you get the ability to comment on the podcast, comment on topics. And then I usually go back and I'll pick some good ones and I'll spend, you know, 10, 15 minutes on the podcast reading those, going over them. A lot of them are enlightening. They're things I don't think of. Sometimes they're corrections. Sometimes they're just irreverent, funny. They make me laugh, what have you. But normally I thank subbers at the end of a podcast, but because Substack put me on their homepage, I just wanted to say welcome. Hopefully you have a idea of what it is we do here. But that's kind of my roundabout way of saying you should subscribe. You should become a paid subscriber. You should give me your money only because it's cheap. It's affordable. You know, for a month, it's cheaper than 2 days of your normal venti Starbucks slop. So there's that. But I wanted to say thank you to Substack for killing my phone battery all weekend. And it's cool. I like, you know, obviously the attention a little bit. And for those of you who are either new here, I'm the other Stephen L. Miller. I'm the good-looking one. And if you don't know who I am, I've written at National Review. I was written in commentary at Fox News, occasionally in the New York Post. I've had this podcast for 3 years now, I think. 4 years-ish, something of that. But I was on the Conservatarians with John Gabriel for a few years. And obviously I'm on Twitter at Red Stees. Currently a contributing editor for Spectator and Spectator Magazine, as well as I do a weekly post over at the Washington Examiner. But for the most part, and you can sometimes catch me on your TV occasionally, I'm on with Kennedy on Fox Business, which I will be this Wednesday. But I still am mostly independent media. This is our own little independent band operation over here from the big kids. I like to keep it that way, as I've always said. I don't have sponsors. I've never had sponsors, partly because I don't want to rely on sponsors who could drop me for anything I say or do. I'm completely dependent and always have been on subscribers. And that allows me kind of a freedom to say what I want about anybody that I want on any topic that I want. Which is a fun power to have. There's the email again. That's what I've been putting up with. Like for the last 3 days, just my phone on silence. But that's a good problem to have. So again, thank you for subscribing. Even at the Dreg freebie level, it's kind of my job to hopefully make sure you decide to become a paid member. And like I said, you get to interact with other users, leave comments on the podcast. I do a founding member chat thread at the beginning of the week where I pull a lot of comments from. That's obviously the founding member level. So there's just some more fun perks to interact with me directly, which is, it's a big thing about why I do this and why I do this differently than some of the other bigger kids, is being independent and kind of a smaller egg in the basket. I have the ability to interact with the normies and subscribers, which you don't get from a lot of other large Substack writers, podcasters, whatever. I'm kind of an old Andrew Breitbart, right-leaning conservative guy who I've always said I believe in more voices, not less. So my goal is to kind of bring as many voices into this whole thing as possible, which is kind of the inspiration for the Verse Us media. It's us versus them. Before I get into Fauci, quick comment about the Oscars. I did not watch the Oscars going on my third or fourth year. And as I've stated in the past, I was a film school kid back in high school and post-high school, screenwriting and editing, directing, all of that fun stuff. And I worked at Blockbuster Video back in the day, so I had a video pile collection, whatever. Me and my friends who I do film school projects with, we would bet on the Oscars. They would come over. We'd just watch them every year. And it was just kind of fun. And just obviously through the years and years, that's tapered off, partly due to the fact that the show just doesn't become fun anymore. It becomes political and scoldy. And I don't care about people whose, you know, politics aren't mine in Hollywood. But that content overrides the whole idea of what, you know, film is supposed to be. And it just becomes a long, extended, dour experience of self-importance that it's just not worth my time anymore. Another part of that is I've just become so much pickier in the films that I choose to see, the films that I choose to drag my butt out to the theater or even just sit down and watch – in my spare time, which I don't have a lot of. It's so I've tapered off on the Oscars for a while. And then last year, obviously, with the Will Smith, Chris Rock slap, I just was like, this has just become a spectacle. It's turning into the MTV Music and Movie Awards where Kanye storming the stage on Taylor Swift or whatever. And I'm like, I can't imagine it even being less interesting than it is now. That all said, as I said, I didn't really watch. I tuned in some clips on Twitter, whatever. I kind of checked the live feed. It sounded like this was the best show in years and years. It sounded like Kimmel didn't get political or serious. At least they got all the envelopes right, unlike the last time he hosted. And it sounded like that it was, for the most part, a show where at least the films that seem like they deserve to win deserve to win. I had a little bit of a dust-up on Twitter when Avatar beat Maverick for visual effects. And I had Kyle Smith from Wall Street Journal, a few others pushing back on me. And they said, you know, Avatar completely deserves it because, you know, it's dots on the faces and it's the whole thing. And then it's creating this world into a computer. And that's kind of my issue with it, is Avatar to me is an animated film. Yeah, it's motion capture. You're capturing people's, you know, likenesses and faces, but it's an animated film. You're not capturing an image through a camera. You're not capturing a performance through a camera. You're capturing a performance and then manipulating it in a computer with animation. And I will die on this hill. And no, I did not see Avatar Way of the Water. So I'm not going to judge the story of it. I'm not going to judge the content. I'm going to judge what I see with my eyes. And I made the argument that I don't know how you make the argument that Maverick saved the movies. It saved the theater-going experience. And I would argue there's a lot of validity to that. Because it was a movie where people said, you have to come out and watch this because you're going to shit your pants. You're going to, you know, grip the seat when the sound mixing is happening. And they're putting real people into real airplanes where they have to act like real fighter pilots. And then there's also some visual, obviously CGI, that's involved with that as well. But if you're going for a visual experience that is a must go to the theater scene. People might argue that with Avatar. And I'm not insulting the grandness of Avatar. I'm suggesting that the visual effects of returning to a real stylized action format where you're putting actors into real situations on set, whether that set is on the ground or in the sky and filming them, is a more visually stunning experience than a 100% computer-generated film. I'm old school that way. So that was the only one I really kind of had an opinion on. I did see Everything All the Time, All at Once, whatever. And okay, sure, fine. Zero problems with the people winning who won those in those performances. Michelle Yeoh, obviously, winning Best Picture Screenplay. Because I am so cynical with film and performers and actors and again, the politics that have come with this, whether, you know, it's just taking on progressive politics or now, you know, kind of submitting to China as a movie market. There's a lot about film and a lot about movies that just make me cynical. It's really hard not to get behind Brendan Fraser. What's interesting to me about The Whale, not so much that, you know, he wins that. But what you've learned, if you're an actor in Hollywood, you should be telling your agent, get me into a fucking movie of Darren Aronofsky's. Because while his films don't always land, and they are rarely nominated across the board, odds are if you land in one of his films as a lead, you're going to win an Oscar. Or you're going to be nominated for one. Natalie Portman won hers for The Black Swan. Mickey Rourke's comeback for The Wrestler. Which a lot of people argue should have won over Sean Penn. And that was the year Sean Penn won for Milk. But the lesson of Darren Aronofsky is if you get in one of his movies, and yeah, there's a rare exception. There's the, you know, Noah, The Fountain, which I personally love as a film. And The Fountain's behind-the-scenes thing is something you should look into about the failures of Hollywood movie making. But a year ago, nobody's talking about Brendan Fraser. I mean, this is a guy who had severe health problems on some of the movies that he had made, and just he basically almost died. And so he drops out and he goes away. And obviously there was comments on, you know, his looks with his hairline and his weight and all of that stuff. And then he comes back with the Whale and he sweeps the awards. He sweeps the SAG and he ends up just winning an Oscar, just coming out of the blue. And so that's kind of how I looked at this year. It's hard not to root for the people who won an Oscar. Short Round and Data from The Goonies has an Academy Award before Harrison Ford, which is kind of my favorite thing. So that's how I looked at that show. I didn't watch it, but when you go down the list and you watch some of the clips and the highlights, it's hard to, you know, be kind of about anything that happened. And maybe the Oscars will learn from this. We'll see the ratings, and maybe they'll learn that, hey, maybe the idea is to keep the show light and fun, and politics and woke culture and cancel culture and all of this shit out of it. I had originally thought when Will Smith and Chris Rock had that incident last year that this year the Academy would stage a ratings coup by making up by having Will Smith and Chris Rock host the show together. I even predicted like they would walk out, or at the very least like present Best Picture, and they would walk out and everyone would stand and cheer. And Chris Rock would give Will Smith a slap back, a free shot, and everyone would cheer. And Chris Rock's live Netflix special that came out last week made it abundantly clear that that's not ever going to happen. Chris Rock isn't quite over that yet, nor should he be. But just some quick thoughts on that show. Again, I didn't watch it, so I don't have the biggest breakdown of it. But I think that if I had to quibble, and I said on Colin, I still think Austin Butler gave the performance of the year and probably should have won Best Actor. It's incredibly hard to pull off Elvis Presley and do it like you're not cheesing it up. And he really, especially in the second half of that film, which I said the first half isn't very good, it's rescued by the comeback special and then on into the end. And even if it whitewashes just how paranoid and Elvis's kind of personal hell went into the toilet bowl at the end, it's an almost impossible task to play a character like that, and I think that he did it. I probably still would have given Best Picture to Maverick, simply because if you come out as an Academy voter and you say, this is the film that saved Hollywood, it saved the theater-going experience, it was the first post-pandemic film, and then Christopher Nolan might have something to say with that with Tenet, but I still probably for that reason would have given Best Picture to Maverick. I also thought it interesting that in this year of this, you know, Maverick saved the movies kind of thing, that Tom Cruise wasn't in attendance at the show. And this would have been a perfect year to give him kind of an appreciation Oscar, as he has yet to win a single one as well. He's always had a few roles that get him nominated that just see another role better than him in a year. When he was nominated for Born on the 4th of July, Daniel Day-Lewis wins. When he was nominated for Jerry Maguire, Nicolas Cage wins. And then his best performance, where he actually should have been awarded the statue, which was Magnolia, Michael Caine wins. And so at the very least, there should probably be an appreciation Oscar for Tom Cruise somewhere down the line. That's it. Those are my Oscar thoughts. Hopefully, maybe they learn from this. On to Anthony Fauci. He has reached into the realm of self-parody with this answer on with Jim Acosta, to the point where I'm sitting here listening to this guy talk, and he's not convinced of what he is saying. He is using political language, and he knows it. And how I know this, how I know that he doesn't even believe what he's saying in this, is one, who he's saying it to, and two, Fauci's never entered the realm of absolutely treating people around him with self-parody and contempt. You've been listening to the Versus Media Podcast, free member version. To get the rest of the podcast, additional segments, as well as comments, questions answered on the podcast as part of the community, please consider joining one of my three subscriber tiers. There's a monthly, then there's a yearly, and then there's a founding tier as well, which I will participate in chats with members weekly and offer some other perks. You're always, of course, welcome to stay a free member here, and there's, of course, no obligation to subscribe. But you should, because that's where all the fun actually happens. This is the Versus Media Podcast on Substack, and as usual, don't ever talk to journalists.